Thousands of Israelis took to the streets in Jerusalem yesterday to celebrate the day the city was unified after the 1967 war, something not celebrated by Palestinians who see the city as their future capital occupied by Israel. A more harmonious portrait of Jerusalem can be found in a cookbook from 2012. In Jerusalem, a Cookbook, restaurateur Yoram Ottolenghi and chef Sammy Tamimi collected memories of their childhoods, Yoram as a Jew in West Jerusalem and Sammy a Palestinian in East Jerusalem. In the 3 years since its publication, Jerusalem, a Cookbook has become a sensation. Ottolenghi's early cookbook, Plenty, was popular, but Jerusalem has inspired what the New York Times called Jerusalem fever. And perhaps because of the book's culinary harmony, Brandeis University, which is non-sectarian but sponsored by the Jewish community, awarded Yoram Ottolenghi an honorary degree this past weekend, saying that in food you find not only a source of nourishment for the body, but also an essential ingredient in the recipe for global understanding. When Yoram Ottolenghi came to our studios, we asked what that citation meant to him.
Well, I think without ever intending to do that, the food that my co-author, Sammy Tamimi, who is a Palestinian, I'm an Israeli, the food that we cook, the recipes that we've published have inspired people to cook Mediterranean food, to cook Middle Eastern food, and see us as kind of symbols of collaboration that unfortunately doesn't exist on the ground. So I think without ever intending for this to happen, it has happened, which is wonderful.
Both of you were living outside of Jerusalem and had been for years. You both met in London.
That's correct. Yeah.
How does that work? A Jew from Jerusalem meets a Palestinian in another city? How does that work?
Well, you know, that it's funny because we are, you know, we are not those labels. We're just two people. You know, we're quite similar in many ways, and that similarity transcends everything else. And we're not political animals. In a sense, we're not really good representatives of our own cultures. So it's very easy for us to get on. And we love the same kind of food, and we love celebrating food and eating wonderful things and, you know, and cooking hummus or whatever, all those wonderful things.
By the way, you had us at Plenty. We were huge fans. But now, Jerusalem, what do you think of this explosion in popularity, people having potluck suppers around it and cooking their way through the books and blogs and Facebook posts? What do you make of that?
I don't know. I mean, obviously, it struck a chord and people are enjoying this kind of food. In my mind, there's two elements to that. So in Plenty, in the sequel, Plenty More, I've put the emphasis on vegetables, really. I mean, it was all about vegetables and how far you can take them and, you know, just discovering new ways. Because people were stuck in their own ways somehow with vegetables. They were kind of boiling them to death and doing horrible things. And I, all of a sudden, Sammy and I said, you can char-grill them and marinate them and use spices and tons of herbs and all sorts of wonderful things to make your vegetables taste really, really good. Jerusalem is a different story because it brings in a lot of the Middle Eastern flavors, things like tahini sauce and preserved lemon and pomegranate molasses and za'atar and all sorts of condiments and
za'atar.
Spices. Za'atar, it's a local spice or herb that's dried and mixed with sesame seeds, some salt, a couple of other things. And it's a really beautiful, it's got a really beautiful savory flavor. So all those things, we started using them and introducing them to people, and I think it made people go, ah.
Well, the New York Times did a deep look at cookbooks that capture the imagination, as they say yours has, and compared it to, for instance, The Joy of Cooking. They spoke to Marvin Taylor, who's at the Fales Library at NYU, who pointed out that The Joy of Cooking was a bestseller in 1931, 2 years after the stock market crash, when suddenly thousands of American women were cooking for themselves. So what do you think it is about this point in time that's making people who don't cook? And by the way, you can get everything online. You don't need a cookbook.
Yeah.
Why do you think they're embracing yours?
I think there is a certain element of liberation with the way I cook. It's extremely easy to follow. These are not complicated recipes, but they deliver tons of flavor.
Tick through some of your favorite ingredients. I know eggplant, eggs turn up a lot.
Yeah, eggplants. I use tons of yogurt in my recipe. I find it very useful. And I'm talking full fat, like creamy yogurt that you can put on anything that's hot, either in temperature or spicy, and it just tempers in a wonderful way. I use a lot of lemon juice, a lot of garlic. There's certain spices that I use a lot, like ground cardamom, ground turmeric, coriander seeds, all sorts of flavors that I'll describe as intense, as sharp, as warm.
There's an ingredient that begins with an F.
An Afrika.
Ah, What is that?
Frike is wheat. It's just normal wheat, but it's being harvested earlier before it dries, hence it's green. And it's got a slightly smoky flavor because it's part of the process. The bit of the wheat is being almost burned or singed. So it's got a nice green smoky flavor.
Okay, I have one that is going to stump people. Here's the watercress and chickpea soup with rose water and ras el hanout. It calls for 2.5 teaspoons of, is that ras el hanout?
Ras el hanout, yeah.
What is that?
It's a spice blend, essentially a North African spice blend that actually has, it means the top of the shop, which means the best spices that the stallholder, the shop owner has. The ras el hanout is the best spices put together. So some recipes have 15 spices, some have 25 in them. But essentially, there's a lot of sweet spices. Sometimes rose petals are added as well.
Yeah. People are saying when you eat this food, it gives you a feeling of an idealized place, a Jerusalem that's sun-baked with old rock walkways and maybe you feel a splash of salt or something, when in fact it's a place that's riven, you know, by conflict. What else are you trying to telegraph with your book?
Well, you know, Jerusalem is a tormented place in many senses. I mean, it's a place that is unfortunately in conflict. You know, there's two people living there side by side and not getting on at all. Haven't for a very long time. So this is the basic situation. Now we, Sammy and I, are trying to make the most out of it. So out of the conflict and out of the, you know, the intensity of the emotions also come some amazing foods. People are trying really hard to make the best hummus. So if you go to Jerusalem, you can get a Jewish or Israeli hummus and you can get a Palestinian hummus. They're slightly different, maybe slight variation, but in a sense, it drives people to do the best food they can. And this whole kind of sense of passion about things really is very clear through the food. It comes through in a great way.
Well, you also write, I'm reading at the very beginning of the book, you both write about, well, it's titled A Comment About Ownership.
Yeah.
What do you mean by that? That's an odd way to start a cookbook.
The difficulty is that, you know, where to start. You know, in the Middle East, there's a small piece of land with two nations fighting over it. Everything is important, including the food. As a result, there was always a scramble over ownership. Who invented hummus? Who invented falafel? Who makes it better? Who owns it? Those are really crucial questions when the reality is very shaky and people are really scrambling for identity.
Yeah, well, and what do you conclude? Who owns hummus?
I will not take side. It's definitely an Arab dish. I mean, I don't think anyone would deny that. Palestinian, Lebanese, Syrian, you know, there's a lot of people who can take credit for it. But obviously it became the national food of Israel as well. So, you know, it belongs to everybody now. But, you know, it depends on your perspective. It's a very political thing. You know, a Palestinian would say, you know, this is our food that has been colonized. And Israeli would say, well, that's, you know, we cook it, we love it, we can share it. You know, it doesn't necessarily need to be one way or the other, but there's definitely a conflict around it.
Yeah. Well, you can go that deep into the region when you cook with the book, or you can just say, I can make it too. <You know? laughs> Yoram Ottolenghi, again with Sammy Tamimi, authors of Jerusalem, a cookbook. And we mentioned you're here in our area to receive an honorary degree at Brandeis. What would you tell young people setting out? You're going to be the cooks for the first time. What's the tip?
The tip is to cook what you feel passionately about, not try to follow a trend or follow an idea that is kind of beyond what you know or feel comfortable with. So I would never dare cook Scandinavian foods, even if it's very, very, you know, trendy at the moment. I stick to what I know best and what I am best at.
And for those using the book, just some sort of tip, eggplant, salt it and dry it. Try to get some of the moisture out before you use it. I mean, what's your...
Well, if you ask me about eggplants, I'll tell you. I think the most important thing with eggplants, I like to roast my eggplants in the oven or broil. You call it here, sorry. Yeah. That's the American term.
We roast too.
Grill is broiling, right? Grilling, we call grilling broiling.
Anyway,
when you roast your eggplants, essentially what I say is you need to soak them with a lot of olive oil, a lot of salt and pepper, and you need to leave them in the hot oven for a very long time, like, you know, 25 minutes, half an hour, so until they go really nice and brown. Because the worst thing you can do is undercook an eggplant. You don't want it raw in the center, so keep it going for a little bit longer.
Okay. Yoram, thank you so much.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.